On the morning of August 21st, 1996, Trudy Appleby, an 11-year-old girl from Moline, Illinois, missed her scheduled 9 a.m. phone call with her best friend. 30 minutes later, Trudy was seen getting into a car believed to be a Chevy Celebrity with a white man in his 20s. She was never seen again. Trudy's father came home during his lunch break and made lunch for Trudy, assuming she was out playing with friends. But when he returned at the end of the workday, the lunch was still on the table, untouched, and Trudy was nowhere to be found. A massive investigation was launched, and a person of interest was eventually identified. However, Trudy has never been located. It's been more than 28 years since Trudy vanished, and investigators are still pressuring the community because they believe someone knows something, and at the same time, they continue to search for her. Hey everyone, welcome back to Detective Perspective. My name is Derek Levasseur. I'm a licensed private investigator and former police detective. Each week I'll be covering an unsolved case in story format. I'll then give you my perspective on the investigation and provide contact information for the individuals or organizations connected to the case so that if you have any tips, you can contact them directly and maybe you can help solve a case. So if you're someone who's interested in true crime, specifically unsolved cases, and you would like to hear my opinion on those investigations, please consider subscribing whether you're watching on YouTube or listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever platform you use. Okay, so another case involving a child never gets easier, whether I was an investigator working this case or covering it here on one of the podcasts. Hate it. Just don't like it. As a parent, it's extremely difficult to imagine a world where there's people out there that could hurt someone so innocent, that has their whole life ahead of them and doesn't even really know how dangerous or disgusting this society can really be. And the story behind this one is extremely frustrating. And in a lot of these cases, well, I should say all of them, the goal is to solve the case, right? I want to expose this case to as many people as possible in the hopes that someone who has information will come forward and it'll lead to some type of resolution. With this case, like some others I've covered, you're going to find that law enforcement feels like they know what happened. They just don't have the evidence to support it. And to be honest, we are running out of time. The people who are potentially involved are slowly dying. And this is a constant battle and struggle that I have with these open investigations because you want to hold on to the integrity of the case, but at what cost? And if you are able to solve the case, but it isn't until 20, 30, 40 years later, and the person responsible is on their deathbed or already gone, what did you really solve? And if the person isn't held accountable for what they did, is that really justice? I pose that question to you guys, but for me personally, the answer is emphatically no. So there has to be a balance there between keeping what you can internally, but also sharing as much as possible to increase the probability of solving it by having someone be incentivized or being triggered by something you said to come forward and help you as the investigator to come to the ultimate goal that everyone has, which is to bring justice to the victim, the family, and ultimately hold the person responsible accountable. So with this particular case, we're going to talk about a few individuals, and my goal here is to apply pressure just like everybody else is trying to do. Law enforcement believes they know to a certain degree what happened and who might be responsible, and they need those individuals or that individual to come forward. So essentially, I'm trying to share Trudy's story with you guys and also do my part in hopefully making that happen. All right, well, we know this story is not going to be a good one, so I might as well stop stalling. Let's dive into this week's case. Trudy Leanne Appleby was born on September 4th, 1984, to parents Brenda and Dennis in Utah. When she was around 4 years old, Trudy, her parents, and her older half-brother Sean moved to Moline, Illinois, in the Quad Cities area. In the mid-1990s, when Trudy was around 10 years old, her parents separated and Dennis was granted custody. This was a good fit as Trudy and Dennis were very close and spent a lot of time together. Trudy was an outgoing and energetic child. She loved swimming, camping, and gymnastics. Dennis described her as exceptionally intelligent, so bright that she was offered the opportunity to skip a grade. By the summer of 1996, Trudy was approaching her 12th birthday, and she spent most of her days hanging out with her best friend Amber, and the two had a set routine. Every morning, Trudy would call Amber at exactly 9 a.m. to plan their day, and after that, they'd meet up and spend hours together. On August 20th, Trudy and Amber spent the day together as usual, and that afternoon, they walked to the top of Trudy's driveway, said goodbye, and confirmed their 9 a.m. phone call for the next morning. Trudy then made her way home following the long driveway that passed two houses and crossed a small ravine before reaching her house. That evening, everything seemed normal. Dennis and Trudy were both looking forward to an upcoming vacation. Dennis had planned to take Trudy and Sean to Utah on August 23rd, but unfortunately, they would never take that trip. The next morning, on August 21st, Dennis said goodbye to Trudy, who was still asleep in bed, before leaving for work. Then at 9 a.m., Amber's phone didn't ring like it had every other morning that summer. She became concerned, so she tried calling Trudy, but there was no answer. When Dennis came home during his lunch break, he noticed that Trudy wasn't there, and at first he didn't think it was that unusual. He assumed that she was out playing with Amber or another friend, so he made her her lunch, left a note on the table, and then headed back to work. But when Dennis returned home that evening, the lunch and the note were still on the table untouched. Dennis looked around and found that Trudy's purse and makeup were still in the house, but there was no signs that she had been there. Dennis immediately knew something wasn't right, so he started calling Trudy's friends and some neighbors, but no one had seen her that day. And by 7:30, Dennis had no choice but to report Trudy missing to the Moline Police Department. Unfortunately, law enforcement initially believed that Trudy was a runaway and didn't take her disappearance that seriously. And we just covered this last episode with Brian Schaefer, and I talked about the circumstances surrounding his disappearance and why they may not officially file a report, but they could have gone out and done at least an initial investigation. That is not the case here. We're talking about what's going on, a 12-year-old girl. She doesn't have a history of going missing like this. She hasn't been seen all day. Her father is telling you that this is not normal for her. And when you have this small window of opportunity, it's already been 12 to 14 hours without anybody seeing her. The report needs to be filed immediately. No questions asked, no excuses. This is a complete drop of the ball. I can't even understand why law enforcement would assume that they know this girl better than her own father. It pisses me off. There's no other way to slice it. I don't have any excuse for them. If they didn't immediately file the report and didn't immediately have officers out at her house and out in that neighborhood, then they're wrong. I don't care what the excuse is. It should have been out to every agency in that immediate jurisdiction. I'm even messing up my words as I'm talking because I'm getting more and more pissed off, but not going to cut it. That's what it is. This is unacceptable, period. Moving on, because it's not going to change it now, but at least you know how I personally feel about it. And as I just said, Dennis knew that his daughter didn't run away. So he took the initiative, and that night he got on his CB radio and shared Trudy's description: brown hair, blue eyes, under 5 feet tall, and around 80 pounds. And from what I understand, there was no positive responses. No one had seen her. I don't know how much he was communicating with people, but nothing of value came from this transmission, although he was trying everything because clearly the police weren't helping out. Now, when Trudy still hadn't returned the next day, the Moline Police Department began to take the case more seriously. Thank you. Appreciate you. Now, investigators started by interviewing friends and family about the morning of August 21st, but no one had heard from her, including Trudy's mother, Brenda. When police turned their attention to Trudy's neighbors, they uncovered a critical lead. A neighbor reported seeing Trudy around 9 a.m. on the morning of the 21st in the driveway of her home near 41st Street and 23rd Avenue. And this is why I'm so flustered, because if they immediately started to act on what her father had reported, they would have been out there sooner. They could have talked to friends and family immediately. And maybe that evening, they would have gone and spoke to neighbors. And when they did, this neighbor would have come forward and given them that information. So 9 p.m. at night getting that information, or 9 a.m. in the morning, 12-hour difference. Do you think that could have an impact on the case? You let me know in the comments. You know how I feel. Now, this neighbor said that they saw Trudy getting into a silver or gray car, possibly a Chevy Celebrity, and the driver was described as a man in his 20s with dark curly hair. The neighbor also provided a detailed description about the man's clothing, even down to his shoes. They described him as wearing a baseball cap, blue Nike shoes, blue or black shorts, and a t-shirt with print on it. So with this information, law enforcement shared descriptions of both Trudy and this unidentified man with local and national agencies. The following day, August 23rd, this was supposed to be the day that Dennis, Trudy, and Sean left for vacation, but instead, Dennis spent the day handing out missing persons flyers. He told the dispatch, quote, "I've got to get my girl's picture out to as many people and as many places as I can. Somebody has to have seen her. My little girl's out there someplace, she's scared, and I want her home." The FBI soon joined the investigation and family members were asked to take polygraphs, and Dennis later said that they all passed. Now, law enforcement has confirmed that Dennis and Brenda passed their tests. However, they did not specify the results for anyone else. So I'm not saying look too deep into that, but that's all they have acknowledged publicly. And listen, some of you may not like the fact that they're polygraphing the parents, especially when they have this unidentified person who clearly is not Dennis, because the neighbor would have been able to say, yeah, no, I saw Dennis picking her up at 9 a.m. But you still have to go through the motions. You want to dot every I, cross every T, and that starts with the family. Yes, there was a good relationship between Dennis and Trudy, but you know what? Just for the sake of investigation, in case something comes up later, you want to put it on file. You want to officially interview them, have them take a polygraph if they're willing to do so. And if it comes back fine, that's okay. At least you covered your, you know what. And as far as Brenda's concerned, we know that she wasn't living with Trudy. And although the unidentified person was a male, if Brenda was somehow involved, maybe she was working in conjunction with a male, or maybe she was seeing someone and this person is connected to her. So what does it really hurt to bring her in, have her take a poly, and see what happens? I know how many of you feel, and I'm right there with you. Polygraphs are not 100% reliable. I agree with you guys, but it's a tool. You use it, you evaluate the information, and you move on. And that's exactly what we're doing on this case right after this break. Okay, so a week after Trudy's disappearance, police released a sketch of the driver seen picking her up. And while this was going on, the search also continued. And by mid-September, nearly 20 billboards of Trudy's photo and information were placed across the area. But as the year came to an end, there still were no arrests and no sign of Trudy. In 1997, the family marked the one-year anniversary of Trudy's disappearance with a balloon release, a tradition they would carry on for years to come. Over the next year, Trudy's family continued their own investigation, gathering leads and passing them along to law enforcement. By 1998, Dennis had a theory about what had happened to his daughter. He believed that she had been kidnapped. He told the dispatch, quote, "We're all convinced it's someone right around here, and it's someone we know, but the police can't prove it." The police confirmed that they had followed the leads Dennis mentioned, but they still had no suspects. In August of 2000, law enforcement released an age progression photo of what Trudy might look like at 16 years old. But despite renewed attention, the information they needed to find her didn't come. By 2001, both the Moline Police and the Illinois State Police had assigned an officer specifically to Trudy's case, but it would be another year before someone came to their and the public's attention. In August of 2002, a man named David Whipple was arrested and charged with multiple felony counts of criminal sexual assault against a victim who was between 10 and 11 years old. The charges stemmed from incidents that occurred between 1996 and 1997, the same time frame of Trudy's disappearance. Even more concerning to investigators was the fact that Trudy had been friends with Whipple's daughter and had visited their home multiple times. Whipple had been interviewed in regards to Trudy's disappearance shortly after she went missing and was re-interviewed following his arrest for the unrelated sexual assault charges, but he has always said he wasn't involved. Despite these major red flags, the police announced that Whipple was not a suspect in Trudy's disappearance. In November of 2002, he pleaded guilty to one count of criminal sexual abuse of a family member, and he was sentenced to 172 days in jail and 4 years of probation, which, in my opinion, isn't long enough. A few years later, in 2005, Trudy's case was officially declared cold. Law enforcement stated they would continue to follow up on tips, but the investigation was no longer active. And this is always unfortunate to hear. I'm sure it's very difficult for the family to hear this, but I have to say, I appreciate the candor. I appreciate the honesty. A lot of police departments will come out and say, yeah, we're still actively working it 20 years later, when you know they're not. You know it's sitting on some shelf collecting dust. So although you never like to hear that the case is no longer being actively pursued, that is the reality of it. Once all leads are followed up on, there's not much they can do. If they've explored all angles, they really need the public to come forward to help reinvigorate the case. So as much as it's hard to hear them say this, like I said, I do appreciate them coming out and at least being honest. And while speaking to the dispatch, a spokesperson for the police department said, quote, "There's always hope one of these days a little girl will walk back into a family's life and say, hey, I just had to run away. But we're not optimistic that's going to be the case." Yeah, no shit, Sherlock. No shit, that's not the case. I didn't really understand this quote. I saw it. I wanted to include it. It seems a little insensitive to me because it's so far from the truth. There's no indication that Trudy would have ran away, especially when we have a witness saying that she got into a guy's car. What are we doing here? So I don't understand why they would make this comment. It seems a little insensitive to me, but I always try to call it how I see it, and they said it, so I'm including it. All right, so let's fast forward a little bit in the timeline. In 2006, a decade after Trudy's disappearance, another age progression photo was released to show what she might look like as a young adult. Along with the photo, police also shared new information with the media. They revealed that two items were missing from Trudy's home when she disappeared: a black one-piece swimsuit and a beach towel. Investigators also disclosed that in the days leading up to her disappearance, Trudy had asked to go swimming with her friend and friend's father, David Whipple, who lived on Campbell's Island in East Moline. And although Dennis told Trudy she couldn't go, phone records suggested that she might have planned to go swimming anyway. And further evidence of Trudy's plans came from that neighbor who had seen her getting into the Chevy Celebrity, or at least what they thought was the Chevy Celebrity. So this information that I'm about to share with you wasn't initially released to the public. And I can understand that. You want to keep some of it in-house while you're conducting your preliminary investigation. But as I just said a few minutes ago, we're talking over a decade later. Seems like this might have been something that could have came out sooner. But regardless, this is what we have. The neighbor who initially reported seeing Trudy also reported that Trudy was wearing a black one-piece swimsuit and carrying a beach towel as she got into the car. She was also wearing spandex shorts, blue tennis shoes, socks, and a t-shirt. Why is this so important? Well, there's no way that this neighbor would have known that the two items missing from Trudy's house was a black bathing suit and a beach towel. So the fact that this neighbor was able to identify those two missing items on Trudy that day gives an extreme amount of credibility to the neighbor, and it makes her description of the individual who picked her up and the vehicle that much more credible. And it's extremely important, and it tells us that more than likely this neighbor nailed it and they were spot on, and everything that they said should be taken extremely seriously if it hadn't already been up to that point. I would hope it had been, but yes, this is a compelling piece of evidence. It ties it together and it gives validity to the report from that neighbor. And it probably means more than likely that the description given by this neighbor about this male suspect, she probably described the person responsible for Trudy's disappearance. And the fact that they haven't been able to identify that person up to this point, it's kind of surprising, to be honest, in this community like this, with that detailed of a description, you think they would have found this person, but yet, here we are, at least up to this point in the story. But we're going to fast forward in the story again, because it would take another 6 years before significant progress was made in Trudy's case. In 2012, law enforcement conducted a search near Rock River in Kelowna. Using an excavator and cadaver dogs, the search generated new leads, but ultimately did not recover Trudy or provide conclusive answers. And as far as some of the details out of that search, as far as I can tell, none of that has been ever made public. So what I've just shared with you is what we know. New leads, but what they actually were in regards to, I can't tell you. Now, while this is transpiring after all these years, Trudy's family continued their annual tradition of releasing balloons every August 21st to honor her memory and keep hope alive. But in 2014, tragedy struck again. In October, her Her mother, Brenda, was killed by a drunk driver. And just a few months later, in January of 2015, Trudy's grandmother also passed away. They both left this world without knowing what happened to Trudy. But I do want to note, despite these devastating losses, Dennis and Brenda's brother, Ray, continued to hold these annual vigils for Trudy, but not only Trudy, also Brenda and Trudy's grandmother. So you have all these years of tragedy, really no breaks in the case, and a police agency that has publicly said that they're no longer really actively investigating the case, they're more reactive, and the only way that anything's going to happen is if new information comes in. Well, I'm happy to report that that new information did come in, and it led them to publicly name their first person of interest, William Ed Smith. Now, Smith wasn't a stranger to the Appleby family. He was a family friend and also the father-in-law of none other than David Whipple. The Quad City Times reported that law enforcement questioned Smith after Trudy's disappearance, but he denied ever seeing her that day. Smith passed away in 2014 at the age of 72, and sometime after his death, a witness came forward and placed Smith with Trudy on the day she vanished. And while the media didn't disclose the witness's identity, Dennis later stated that it was David Whipple, that he was the witness who finally came forward. So nothing to verify that. I don't see it in any of the documents. It wasn't confirmed by law enforcement. So take that information as you will, but that's what Dennis has said, that it was David Whipple, who was this unidentified witness, who eventually put Ed with Trudy on the day she disappeared. But because David Whipple was never confirmed by law enforcement to be this witness, I'm going to continue to refer to them as this new witness. And this new witness reported seeing Smith in a car that matched the description of the Chevy Celebrity the neighbors saw Trudy climb into on the morning she disappeared. The witness went on to claim that they had seen the car near Smith's home on Campbell Island in East Moline during the late morning hours of August 21st. And here's the most heart-wrenching part of this statement, if you ask my opinion. The witness said that they were just feet away from Smith's car as it passed by, and inside, this witness saw a young female passenger they believed to be Trudy. Now, according to police, the witness provided extensive details that led them to believe Trudy was the person in the car with Smith. So you're probably sitting here asking yourself, why didn't this witness come forward sooner, whether it was David Whipple or somebody else? Well, they were asked that question, and the witness claimed that Smith had threatened their life. That's the reason they didn't come forward. They were afraid that if they did, big old bad Ed Smith was going to take them out. So apparently, their life was more important than a 12-year-old girl. Coward. Sorry to call it, coward. So obviously, with this new information, police continued investigating Smith and learned that after Trudy's disappearance, the car that he had been seen driving was scrapped. They also discovered that Smith had reportedly become despondent whenever Trudy's name was mentioned. So based on this information, the police believed that Smith was the last person to see Trudy the day of her disappearance. Ed Smith was officially named a person of interest in Trudy's case in August of 2017, and investigators urged the community to help fill in the gaps, stating they believe someone close to Smith knew what happened to Trudy and needed to come forward to help them solve this case. I wonder who they're referring to. Who could have been close to Smith and knows what happened to Trudy? I can think of one person, but there may be someone else as well. But before we get to this other person, here's another tough pill to swallow in this case, because after Smith was named publicly, Dennis told WQAD that just 2 days after Trudy's disappearance, he informed the police that he believed Ed Smith and others were involved in Trudy's disappearance. What? Why was that not acted upon? If it was, how much work did police do with this information? Sometimes when it comes to family members, they may not be investigators, but they know the victims in the case and they know their community, and they may have information that law enforcement isn't privy to. Maybe they're not sharing everything they know, but if they come forward and say, hey, you might want to look into this person, there may be a reason for that. And I really do wonder if Ed Smith is responsible for Trudy's disappearance and Dennis came to law enforcement within 48 hours, what was Trudy's condition? We still don't know Trudy's condition to this day, but if you're to believe that she is no longer with us, was she still alive at this point? Could this have been the difference in the case? Ed Smith didn't live that far away. They could have went to his house and asked to search his property. Was that done? And if it wasn't, why not? But put that aside for a second and let's focus on all this new information that's coming in, because obviously that caused Trudy's investigation to pick up again. And in October of 2017, investigators conducted a cadaver dog search of David Whipple's former property on Campbell's Island. And while the search did not find Trudy, investigators did collect unspecified items and sent them out for testing. Now, what those items are, we do not know. By July of 2018, law enforcement publicly stated they believed that one or more individuals were involved in both Trudy's disappearance and its cover-up. They reiterated that they were missing only a few pieces of the puzzle to solve Trudy's case. In an effort to generate new leads, Crime Stoppers put up billboards across the Quad Cities with a bold message, "You know something, it's time to say something. Absolutely love it." In January of 2019, it seemed like the pressure was finally paying off when police located a boat that they had been searching for after identifying Ed Smith as a person of interest. Now, while Smith didn't own the boat, investigators confirmed that he had access to it, and over 400 swabs were collected from the boat and sent in for testing. And again, it's unclear if anything came back from this, but man, I would love to be a fly on the wall and look at those results. Now, in August of 2020, police announced two additional people who also would have had access to the boat: David Whipple and a guy who knew Ed Smith named Jameson, also known as Jamie Fisher. Both men were officially named persons of interest, and investigators asked the public to come forward with any new information about them. Now, I want to address something really quick, because I'm sure there's going to be some people asking, well, if David Whipple was officially named a person of interest, does that negate Dennis's statement that David Whipple was the witness? Absolutely not. Law enforcement, for the most part, they're not morons. So even though someone comes forward with all this critical information years later, they're not going to automatically say, well, if they were involved, they wouldn't come forward. There could be a lot of reasons they come forward. And I'll say one right now instead of saving it for the perspective. If somehow David Whipple was involved, maybe in conjunction with Ed Smith, and he never came forward while Ed Smith was alive, that may have been because he knew if he did, Ed Smith would implicate him. Well, with Ed Smith out of the picture, he can come forward and now play hero and hopefully deter law enforcement from looking into him. So for me, this doesn't rule him out as this key witness who came forward. It's still possible, but this could be law enforcement saying, hey, David, thanks for the information. We now think you implicated yourself. But again, we don't know. We don't know if David Whipple was that witness, and we don't know yet if he's responsible for this, but in no way, shape, or form does them coming out and naming him as a person of interest rule out the possibility that he was also the key witness in this case. Now, after these announcements were made, KWQC-TV6 tracked down Fisher and Whipple to ask them about their involvement in Trudy's disappearance. Whipple declined to appear on camera but spoke with reporter Darby Sparks, and he denied any connection to Trudy's disappearance but claimed that he had seen her with Ed Smith on the day she vanished. Now, Whipple stated he believed that Smith was involved, but noted he and Smith never got along and claimed he'd never interacted with Jamie Fisher. So there you have it right there. Either David Whipple is the witness, or David Whipple is another person confirming what this main witness said. If you're asking me, I think the two are the same. My big takeaway is that David Whipple's a liar. He was interviewed initially when Trudy disappeared. He was interviewed again after the sexual assault charges, and in both instances, he claimed to know nothing about what happened to Trudy. That would have been his opportunity to come forward and help solve this case, and yet he chose not to do so, and you can come to your own conclusions, but it probably has something to do with what I had just alluded to a few minutes ago. But nevertheless, I'm calling it as it is right now. Whether he was the initial witness or he's this new witness, he's a coward, period. And as far as Fisher's concerned, he was incarcerated on unrelated auto theft charges at the time of this whole thing going down, but he did respond to reporter Sparks as well in a written statement. He didn't address any of the questions about Trudy, but he mentioned that he and Smith hated each other. So that's all we got there. Lead Detective Michael Griffin also spoke with TV6, sharing his theory about what happened to Trudy. He said, quote, "I think Trudy was lured into going swimming. They convinced her that her dad said it was all right, and she was going to go swimming with her friend that day. Our theory is that she was victimized as the result of sexual criminal misconduct at the hands of adult males." Notice what he said there. He didn't say male. He said males. I think that was intentional. Griffin then directly addressed the people who he felt were holding back information by saying, quote, "It's been 25 years. What are you afraid of?" Despite renewed pressure from law enforcement and the new media coverage, the investigation stalled. And in 2022, David Whipple passed away, leaving Jamie Fisher as the only living person of interest. As you can imagine, Trudy's family felt the loss deeply. Her uncle Ray told the Quad City Times that Whipple's death was a devastating blow. And I completely agree. A lot of secrets more than likely died with David Whipple. However, law enforcement didn't give up, and in August of 2023, a tip led police to a backyard in the Kelowna area, but the search of the property didn't uncover anything of value as far as we know. Later that month, Trudy's family gathered for their 26th annual balloon release, marking 27 years since Trudy disappeared. Dennis spoke to WQAD while at the vigil, stating, quote, "The one thing we don't know is where she's at. That's what all of this is about." Dennis said the family believes Trudy passed away, but they still hope for the opportunity to give her a proper burial. And what a thing for a father to have to unfortunately accept that at this point, he's probably not going to see his daughter again, and that at all he's hoping for now is to give her a proper burial. And it breaks my heart. Because in his mind, Trudy's still 12 years old. And to accept what he believes happened to her and what she must have went through, I don't know if I could do it. And although it's not something that I'm directly involved in, as a father, I can't help but feel for him and every father and mother out there who's had to experience something like this. It's an absolute nightmare. Now, on that same day, Moline Police posted another message on Facebook. It read, quote, "27 years ago tonight, Dennis Appleby and Brenda Gordon spent their first of many sleepless nights laying awake, living every parent's nightmare. 6,624 sleepless nights for Brenda and 9,855 nights and counting for Dennis. Thousands and thousands of sleepless nights because predators took their 11-year-old daughter. Thousands and thousands of sleepless nights because a few residents of the Quad Cities continue to cover for those predators, the ones dead and the ones alive." The message continued, "You know who you are. We know you are reading this post, but you aren't liking it or sharing it because you are perpetuating the heinous crimes of another. You aren't talking because you want to side with the predators. So while you try to rest peacefully tonight, just know, we will never give up. We will pursue you. We will pursue those that cover for you. And we will bring Trudy home." Man, I gotta tell you, whoever wrote that statement, they need a raise because they brought it. That was a great statement. I'd rather see them actually deliver on that promise. But who was writing that statement? Whoever was behind it, they were ready for it. And they had that one cooking up for a little bit, but it was impactful. They're calling out the people responsible. They're also calling out people in the community who may have that information. And if you take it at face value, what they're saying is pretty simple. We know who did this. Some of them are still alive. There are people who know they did this, and they've yet to come forward. And you're just as guilty as the predators because of your silence. Pretty straightforward. The most recent update we have in Trudy's case came in August of 2024, when her family held another vigil. Detective Griffin spoke with TV6 once again, emphasizing that someone knows the truth. He reminded the public that Jamie Fisher is the only remaining suspect and issued a pointed warning. Quote, "Keep looking over your shoulder. We'll be there someday soon." But someday soon still hasn't come. Trudy has never been found, and her family is still holding on to the hope that one day they will bring her home. Okay, let's dive into this perspective and elaborate on some of the things I said, although this is going to be more of a call to action than it is about going over theories, because based on what we do know, it's my belief that Ed Smith and David Whipple are involved in Trudy's disappearance. And I think that David Whipple kind of exposed that by coming forward and saying that he saw Ed Smith that day, and yet he didn't come forward. And based on David Whipple's criminal history, it seems like he does have a predisposition to this type of crime. And when you think about criminals that have something, a fascination with children, they usually hang out with each other, whether it's in person or online. You find these pedophile rings where they're sharing pornographic material and images and photos and discussing different occurrences and incidences that they have with children amongst each other. It's this gratification. These sickos all hang out together. So to think that David Whipple and Ed Smith worked together on this with maybe Jamie Fisher, we don't know. It's not out of the realm of possibility. So you could have had David Whipple or Ed Smith pick up Trudy that morning. But this is one thing I will say. If Dennis is telling the truth, and I believe that he is, if David Whipple is your main witness, then that's the only account that you have that Ed Smith picked up Trudy that morning. And with the relationship that David Whipple had with Trudy based on, you know, through his daughter, in my opinion, it's more than likely that it would have been David Whipple to pick her up. But he's not going to say that to law enforcement because that implicates him. So he gives you a little bit of truth and a little bit of a lie. And he kind of just switches out roles where he says, yeah, I saw Ed Smith passing me with Trudy in the vehicle, when in reality, it was David Whipple driving the vehicle with Trudy while Ed Smith passed by. So when you think about that account of that morning from this unidentified witness, you really can't go off of that. The only thing that I'll push back on as far as a way to counter what I've just said is if this other witness, this neighbor who had seen Trudy get into the vehicle with this male driver, this male in his 20s, I would think at this point they would have done a photo lineup with David Whipple and maybe some others, and this witness would have been able to positively identify David Whipple or Ed Smith or Jamie Fisher if they were the ones driving the vehicle. The fact that they haven't publicly come out and said that, meaning law enforcement, does make me question it a little bit, but that could also be because they're keeping things internal because they're still putting pressure on Jamie and anybody else they think may have information. But this is definitely one of those cases where law enforcement has been pretty transparent up to this point. They believe that Ed Smith, David Whipple, and potentially Jamie Fisher were involved in Trudy's disappearance. And they're hoping that not only Jamie Fisher, but some other members of their family or friends were aware of something that was going on at the time when this occurred. And maybe they saw something, maybe they heard something, or maybe one of these three individuals confided in them. And if any of those people are watching this or listening to this and they're thinking, what's the point to coming forward now? What good is it going to do if Ed and David are already dead? It's going to do a lot because Dennis is still out there right now searching for his daughter, and he still deserves the right to know what happened to her. And most importantly, he deserves to bring her home. And if you have the ability to facilitate that, you have a moral obligation to do so. Please, if you're watching this, please, if you're seeing this, do the right thing for everybody involved. Let Dennis at least have that. Let him bring home his daughter. So with that being said, I just want to recap this for not only that person, but also anybody else from that area. Trudy Appleby was last seen at around 9:30 a.m. on the morning of August 21st, 1996 at her home located near 41st Street and 23rd Avenue in East Moline, Illinois. A witness reported seeing her getting into a gray or silver four-door Chevy Celebrity with a white man now believed to be either Ed Smith or David Whipple. At the time, Trudy was wearing a black one-piece swimsuit, spandex shorts, blue tennis shoes, socks, and a t-shirt. She was also carrying a beach towel. Law enforcement has named three persons of interest in the case: William Ed Smith, David Whipple, and Jameson Fisher. To date, no one has been charged in connection with Trudy's disappearance. Police believe they are just missing a few key details to solve this case. Anyone with information about Trudy Appleby's case is encouraged to contact the Moline Police Department at 309-534-2140 or Crime Stoppers of the Quad Cities at 309-762-9500. There is currently a $10,000 reward for information. My final words, as always, go out to the friends and family of Trudy Appleby, specifically Dennis. I don't know if he's going to see or hear this. I don't think he needs to. He's experienced all of what I've said tonight for the last 28 years. And I said it in the episode, I'll say it again. The ability to carry on in spite of what you've endured and to continue to fight for your daughter is inspiring. And I don't know if I'd be capable of doing the same. So I'm thinking about you. We're thinking about you. And we know what your goal is at this point, and we're behind you. We want the same thing. And we're hoping that sooner than later, you get the information you need to finally bring Trudy home. Now, this is usually where I would end the episode, and it's kind of a tough transition, but I do want to try to end this episode on a positive note because it really puts me in a bad headspace. Doing these cases, especially when it involves children and having to go through all the information and relive what some of what they've went through, it's difficult, but I am going to try to end it on a more positive note because bringing it back to the good things we got going on here over at Detective Perspective and in my personal life and business life. Some of you may know, some of you may not know at this point. If you made it to the end of the episode, you're finding out about it if you don't already know. But I am currently on this season of The Traitors on Peacock, NBC. And the first three episodes just came out. I believe when you're seeing this, it's going to be a week ago. And it's basically a show where we go over to Scotland, we live in a castle, they secretly pick three people or four people to be traitors, and then the rest of the castle, the rest of the cast are faithful, and they have to figure out who the traitors are before they murder them. It was a really cool experience for anybody who doesn't know. I was on Big Brother a very long time ago, really didn't have any ambition to do another reality show, but this one came up. It was a cool opportunity. I was still able to speak with my children, and it kind of was in line with what I do, even though it's not a complete representation of that. I'm not only hoping that it brings exposure to some of the things I'm passionate about, but most importantly, I'm hoping that by being on this major show that just won Emmys, brings exposure to the cases I'm covering. I'm hoping that people look me up, see what I'm doing, and start to maybe follow up on some of the cases that we've already discussed here. That's the real goal. That's what we can do to use this quote-unquote notoriety to bring more eyes and ears on these cases that need to be solved. So it was a lot of fun doing the show. I'm hoping some of you check it out and go along for the ride with me. But at minimum, I'm hoping that there's a lot of new people coming here, listening and watching these cases and maybe contributing by sharing them as well. So if you're new here, thanks for coming. I appreciate it. And I'm looking forward to seeing what being on The Traitors does for this channel and how much it helps us grow. So that will be my final words. I appreciate all of you being here. That's going to do it for me. Everyone stay safe out there, and I will see you soon.